Hi, Vincent Grascher. We're here at Locarno to talk about your film, Rootin', running at Piazza Grande. So yesterday was the big premiere. How do you feel?
I'm great. I love this festival. My third year here. I've been here the last 3 years with 3 films in a row. So I like coming back.
You're like a veteran because that means like you've been coming as often as I have.
Pretty much. But literally the last 3 years at Locarno was the international premiere of my last 3 films. World premiere of my film this year, world premiere of last year, and then Bang Bang, which was in 2024, was my international premiere. I was at Tribeca right before that. It's one of my favorite ones.
When did you first come across the story of Rootin'?
First time I came across Rootin' was 2 producers I'd worked with before on my first film. They knew this guy, Brian, and they said, you have to hear a story. He wants to commission somebody to tell it, to write it. And you know, at first I didn't think much of it. I was like, okay, how much money does he have? What's his story? Met him. And from the first time I sat with him and talking to him, I was laughing most of the time because I just, what his experience in there, although intense and it's hell on earth place, you do not want to go to prison. Everyday minutia and the things that they do to just get through the day, to find humor and levity and to make money, I just didn't really know about to that degree. And his specific story, I just thought was hilarious, as well as moving the relationship with his daughter. And so I was interested and I wrote it thinking that was going to be it. I didn't necessarily intend to direct it right away. And I didn't. It was like several years later, I think it was about 4 or 5 years later, when it came through Demetrius and Theo, and they wanted to do it.
Was it hard to build the script? Because I imagine for 13 years, that the whole story, pretty hard to decide what you take in. And was there a lot that you couldn't keep in just because the movie would have been a miniseries otherwise?
Absolutely. There was so much. I had to condense it. Felt it could be done. So initially, after interviewing him, I wrote like a novella. From there, I adapted it to a screenplay. And that first screenplay draft was probably 173 pages. And so I knew, I was like, okay, I put everything I could that made sense into that. And now I knew I had to trim it, tighten it. What can I lose? What needs to go? Yeah. So I spent a good amount of time doing that, finding the way to thread the needle. It was tough because there's so much other stuff that's funny and outrageous that I would love to have been in, but just couldn't fit it.
You're right. Would you just like us to tell us one outrageous thing that you spontaneously remember that you couldn't take in?
Yeah. Which one? Well, there's a couple. One that comes to mind is initially he had basically, when the crime happened, he left his dump truck, pulled the signs off of it and kind of disappeared he ran away from the whole thing and the cops were trying to get a hold of him, but they couldn't prove he was driving. And so he kind of just never talked to the cops. He was avoiding them. And so they were trying to get him to come in to talk. They didn't have enough to arrest him. And then literally 3 years back, he moved to another state. The drug business he gave over to his brother-in-law. You know, he didn't want anything to do with it. So his brother-in-law was doing all the drug selling and all that. And the brother-in-law got busted and the brother-in-law he was going to get 20 years in jail, prison. The cops were like, we're going to charge you with this, unless you write who was driving in the dump when that guy was killed. If you write who was driving, we'll call this a day. We'll let it go. And he did. He wrote a statement that said that Brian was driving. It was an accident, but this is what happened. And he said Brian was driving. And so they arrested him for first degree murder at first.
Even though it was written that it was an accident.
He really wanted to squash the altercation. When he went there, they were attacking the truck. And what happened was the guy jumped on it on the step ladder and he slid underneath it and he fell under. It wasn't as much of like the altercation with the car. He slid underneath and it ran him over and killed him. And so Brian kind of just freaked out. And the reality is he shouldn't drove away. He should have just called the cops. This is what happened. But because he ran, fled for 3 years, and then his brother-in-law wrote that statement, they charged him, tried to throw the book at him. And he went through a whole court process, seeing everyone get in Florida get convicted. His own attorney, though, he hired a really good attorney, was like, you're going to get off. Like, they don't have it. It was an accident. So, but he just got nervous. And so he pled out to manslaughter so he wouldn't get charged for murder. He didn't want to even risk it in the Florida court system. So he's like, even though it was an accident, I'll take involuntary manslaughter and tell the prosecutor. They had already offered him that and he turned it down the first time. But when he came back to them, they like, all right, well, now it's 5 to 15 years and we'll sentence you on this date. And then they sentenced him on this day. But one of the crazy things his attorney did on the sentencing day, because he wanted to show the judge how crazy the family was, he printed a billboard of the dead body of the guy he accidentally killed and he presented it to the court and all the family attacked and tried to attack Brian and the attorney and it was a melee in the court. And he looked at Brian and goes, I just got 5 years off your sentence. So it's like all this crazy stuff. He got 10 years though, because the judge said, if you stopped and talked to us about after that, he's like, I'm convinced it was an accident, but you fled. You didn't want to address it. And he's like, so I'm giving you 10 years. So we pull the exact transcripts from that judge because it's kind of outrageous to acknowledge that, okay, it's probably an accident and you probably would have got off by a jerk.
But just out of spite, you know, it's hard to do the right thing in such a situation. Who of us would know exactly what to do if it's really happening?
Absolutely. And I think he really knew. He just didn't want to deal with it. I think he got scared. And there's so much more to that. Even when he fled, he pulled all the signs off. He left the dump truck and he got picked up by his wife and who was his brother-in-law. And they were driving. And all of a sudden he just freaked out, got out of the car and went into the woods and slept in the woods. Like there's so many crazy things that happened leading up to even in those 3 years of him being away. He was going to different parts of Florida because the cops are trying to find him. And he was staying in different motels. A lot of him just avoiding accountability, which to me, the movie is about being accountable to ego and being selfish because he's a flawed character. And really, it's like after Jamal is killed in the movie, it was the first time I think he's starting to kind of go, one of my friends is killed and sort of based on his behavior because of Brian's behavior affects other people's lives. And it isn't until I think he really knows how it affects his daughter that he goes, man, everything I've ever done is selfish.
And you shot in 3 different prisons. I heard, how did that go down?
Well, in Mississippi, you filmed there to cheat it as Florida. And every time you do a movie, you have the goal is to find a Swiss Army knife type person that just knows everybody. Town knows him. They have a lot of relationships. And he just knew everybody. This guy named Bill, he helped us really secure those prisons. It was tough because logistically it was hard. It took a lot of time to get inside. You had to go through a whole process. And then once you're inside, you're dealing with real inmates walking by. And there's a lot of that. It wasn't a level 4 yard because there's different yards, prison, like rapist murders. It wasn't one of those. It was another type. You know, there were some murderers there, but it wasn't a level 4. Let's say a level 4 and above is worse. This was probably a level 2, level 3 yard. And so, yeah, you walk by inmates and very courteous people. They're working sort of like if you become a trustee, you know, you work, you have a job. And we encountered a lot of them. And it wasn't as hard as you may think. It was definitely a lot of logistic and hoops.
What was the hardest part of the shoot?
There is one. I just have to. The most unfortunate is when things happen that you're not expecting, because no matter how much you prepare, something happens and it can throw everything into the grinder. And so when we did the scenes of Mora driving, trying to escape with them around the prison, the car broke down. And so we're dealing with the prison being really pissed at us because we're in the middle of the roads in the prison. They have jobs to do. These guys are running a prison. And so they were not happy with us. The car wouldn't drive. We had to like get a tow truck to put it on a tow to drive for the rest of the scene. So it was like a chaotic day. That one was really chaotic. That was probably the most stressful day. Most of the time, it's just fun. I mean, that's why I do this. It's a fun making movie.
How did you get Theo Rossi for the main role and knew that he was the right guy?
I had seen him in Emily the Criminal. That was the first thing I really seen him in. I didn't watch Sons of Anarchy, so I didn't know who he was. But when I saw Emily the Criminal, I wrote his name down because I'm like, I don't know who this actor is, but I'd like to work with him one day. And Ronnie Jean Blevins, who played one of the guards in this movie, and he was in one of my previous films. We were just catching up on the phone in 2024 in September. He called me back right after we got off the phone. He said, hey, do you have any projects that are ready to go that fit Theo Rossi, the actor? I was like, wow, I love Theo. You're friends with him? He's like, yeah, I just did a movie with him. It was one of the best productions I'd been with. This guy, Demetrius, great producer. They want to do another movie before the end of the year. Do you have anything? And I thought about it and I was like, well, I wrote this movie about this guy's crazy journey in prison 5 years ago. And I said, here, I'll send it to you. Theo could do that. He looks like he could be that guy. And I want to work with him. Sure, send it. So I sent him that. 2 days later, he goes, Theo loved it. Demetrius loved it. I think they want to do it. And that's how fast. 2-3 months later, we were in Mississippi shooting. Demetrius is a real deal. He's a no-nonsense producer that if he wanted to do something, made it happen.
Do you also work with the real Brian Bruton and actually met him? We are friends now and still in contact?
Yeah. No, Brian lives, I think in Florida or North Carolina. After, obviously, I wrote it, I gave him the material 5 years later. Here we are, about to make it. And so I got back in touch with him. I said, hey, man, this is going to happen. I would love for you to be there. And so he came out while filming and was there as a consultant and exec producer. He was invaluable because have the real guy there, not just to tell Beale about stuff that he did, but just to see any sort of prison dynamic, whether people, how they wore their shoes, how they wore their clothes, how they folded their shirts, how they rolled the toilet paper and put it on their bed, whatever that is. I was like, tell me everything. I want it to be as accurate and as realistic to what life is like in there on the little thing, because that is what real inmates would see when they watch that movie. And so he was there the whole time. It was great. He was a really positive force. And he's actually in the movie too. He was one of the guards who brings Brian back in after and puts him in solitary confinement. That's the real Brian.
That's a pretty ironic role. So did you actually watch the film or parts of the film with the inmates in the prison?
We haven't shown inmates from the prisons yet. I think we're going to have some screenings, hopefully in like San Quentin Film Festival, like some other, there's some other avenues we would love to show prisons and inmates and people who had used to be in prison. Brian has seen it once. And I think it was really tough for him, because I think he has a lot of guilt about just stuff that happened. And I think it was really too surreal of an experience. He was really like emotional, I think, and it was hard. He's coming to our next festival. He's going to come out and be there with his wife. Yeah. So he'll be there for it. He's seen it once. He's very excited about everything going on. So he really wanted to be here, but you know, he works and has a regular career now. But yeah, pleasant, charming guy. Really interesting person.
What would you hope for this film to achieve or to happen to it now that it's about to be released?
I wanted to make a movie that was not your conventional prison film, but that had everything, that was funny, had entertainment, that was emotional. So I want people to see that prison isn't necessarily all those nightmares you hear about when it comes to, I mean, that happens. It's definitely a thing and you definitely don't want to be there. Most of the time, what these guys experience are more along the lines of boring. They find ways to outsmart people. They get very clever and creative because they're forced into it. You're in a cell all day. What are you going to do? I think there's just a different point of view here with this movie, and I hope people can see, like, really, these people are human beings just because they're in prison. There's a lot there. I hope people can see it and kind of experience what it's like, good and the bad.
And do you have any other projects lined up that you are allowed to talk about?
Yeah, I have a few things. One I can't talk about yet. The other one, I'm doing a horror movie, which I love. I love doing horror. Can't get too into detail about it, but really scary and really cool. That'll hopefully go first half of next year. And then I'm doing a movie after that deals with Jonestown, what happened there in the cult of Jonestown, but also basically it's about a man who left the Italian mafia, because that's its own cult, really. So it analyzes two cults, the one of an Italian mafia built, you know, very pro-America, very capitalist driven. The parallels are you can never leave. You have to pay up to the boss. And he leaves that and he falls in love with a woman. She's part of the People's Temple in San Francisco. And you see how that develops. And all he cares about is protecting his nuclear family, his wife and kid, from what happens in Jonestown.
That sounds definitely fascinating. Thank you so much for this interview, Vincent Grescher.
Thanks, Lita.
Yeah.